Hey, patrons and YouTube members, and welcome back to your exclusive weekly patron cast. This time, season 3, episode 17. And as always, there are three things I want to talk about. The first one is a problem I had on my Fedora 37 desktop that I really think should never happen on any kind of computer because it was ultra easy to solve, but it still took me a few hours of try and error to, let's say, resolve the problem for now. So I'm going to talk about that. I'm also going to talk about how the previous videos for last week did and the new ones that are planned for this week. The second topic will be Tuxedo OS. I installed it on my Tuxedo Stellaris 15, and I have a few thoughts about it, so I just wanted to share that. And then I'm going to talk about OpenSUSE and specifically how their YAST graphical tool sort of changed my perception of a Linux graphical experience, but also made me realize that we don't necessarily have to do things the way Windows does it or macOS does it. So let's begin with the channel-related things and the personal issues. So first is that problem on my desktop. My desktop is my main editing machine. It's where I record the podcast, this patron cast as well, and where I edit most of my videos. And so on Saturday, I had just recorded the Linux news video, and I was getting ready to edit it. So I needed to transfer the footage onto my PC, onto my desktop. I use an SD card with a small little USB dongle. So I booted up the desktop, and it dropped me after a minute in an emergency mode, a command line, well, not command line, but command line interface looking thing, where I could not type anything. It just dropped a weird error message that made no sense to me. There was a message saying press enter to continue, which just repeated the same message over and over again. I did not have access to a command line. I could not type anything. I could not switch to a TTY. There was nothing I could do but reboot, basically. And I hadn't done anything to my system previously. The last time I had used it was the day before when I recorded the Linux and open source news podcast, and I had switched the Steam client to the beta version. I had closed the computer normally, it shut down normally, there wasn't a power outage or anything. Everything should have been fine. No updates, no tweaking, no command line shenanigans I had done, nothing. But yeah, it just never made it to a graphical desktop. I got stuck on a message saying that it failed to mount /home. And if I rebooted the computer, the error message changed. Sometimes it was related to FSCK, sometimes it was related to mounting /home, sometimes it was related to something else entirely. And yeah, so I did not have a lot of time because I had to leave at 2 p.m. and it was already 10:30 a.m., which meant I did not have that much time to edit the news video. So it was really, really annoying to have to deal with that right there and then. I was already thinking, well, you know what, I'm going to postpone that video to Sunday when I get back home, because I had to leave to meet with friends in the countryside. I had a 1-hour drive, and we were planning to stay the night there and have a nice little party and coming back home on Sunday. So I was like, you know what, I'm never going to be able to fix this issue and do the video. I still looked up online what people could say, and a lot of people said it's related to your FS tab file. So I booted on a live USB. It was a Tuxedo OS live USB that I had prepared. I'll talk about that in a minute. And I looked at my FS tab. There was absolutely nothing weird in there. No like /tmp or /var that could mess with things. The /home partition was correctly identified using UIDs. It should have worked perfectly. So there was nothing. And then people also said that you could edit your grub entry temporarily to give you access to a command line prompt. So I did it. I think you press, I think it's X or E, I don't remember, on the grub screen when you select the entry you want to boot, and you just add something like rd.break at the end of your Linux kernel, and it gets you a shell, apparently. So I ended up there, but I could not run anything useful from there. FSCK didn't work, it just failed with an error, and I could not run chroot either to try and look at various files. Now, of course, booting a previous entry with an older kernel using grub did not work either, And so I decided, well, you know what, I don't want to deal with that. I'm just going to reinstall something quickly, reinstall Resolve, and hopefully I'll be able to work again because my slash home partition is on a separate partition, so I would not lose much apart from reinstalling DaVinci Resolve. So I had a live USB of Tuxedo OS, which I have just installed on my Stellaris 15. I'll tell you about that in a minute. And I rebooted on that. But then, before reinstalling, I really thought, you know what, if you reinstall, you're also going to have to wait for Sunday. You're also going to have to wait to be Sunday to be able to make that video. So might as well try one last thing. I just opened the KDE's Disk Manager, which was present on the live CD. And I checked every partition with FSCK, the slash boot slash EFI, the slash home, and the slash partition. And no errors were listed or found. It didn't tell me it had found errors or repaired anything. It took like 2 seconds for each partition, so I wouldn't imagine it was there was a lot of stuff to fix. I just thought to myself, you know what, let's just reboot and see if this changed anything. And it did, and Fedora just rebooted normally and works perfectly now. So we have a situation where my system was completely unbootable, couldn't give me a command line prompt, but everything that was needed was just running file system check automatically. So I love Linux, it's really my favorite operating system, but these types of errors are unacceptable. I didn't force shut down my computer, I didn't do anything weird with it, I didn't tweak any config file, there's nothing that should have caused this problem. This should not happen. And I know, it's computers, it's complex, obviously sometimes stuff breaks even when you haven't done anything. But when all that was needed was a file system check, maybe this could be the first step in case the system can't complete the boot process. Maybe running file system check on a partition or on multiple partitions, or offering the option to do so when you're in that emergency mode where nothing works, but clearly you have something that's booted because it can display information and it has an error log, so it has booted something and you can access a shell. So it could offer the option automatically to run file system check instead of just letting you guess what you should do. And maybe that doesn't fix the issue, but it's a nice step that might fix it. So yeah, it was very annoying, and I think we kind of still have a little bit of a ways to go to handle errors and problems with boot more gracefully. Now, about the channel, so the videos that I published last week have done decently well. They're in the ballpark of my average view numbers, a little bit higher than that, so that's good. And for this week, we're only going to have 2 videos because, as always, it's the beginning of the month. So there's a bunch of invoicing, there's taxes and admin work I have to do. So it's only 2 videos. So the videos for this week will be the things Linux can do, but Windows and macOS can't. And we'll have, of course, the Linux news video and the podcast. So the goal for this specific video, the things Linux can do, but others can't, is to show that Linux isn't a clone of anything else, and that it actually has the edge in a bunch of things that either can't be done at all on Windows and macOS, or can be done but with a lot of difficulty, with a lot of configuration, or by using really weird third-party untrustworthy tools. So if you have ideas about those types of things, the things that Linux can do but others can't, let me know in the comments of this Patreon cast, and I will gladly add any suggestion to the script if they fit what I'm trying to do here. Okay, now let's talk about Tuxedo OS. And I know, yeah, Tuxedo is a sponsor of the channel, but yeah, they didn't ask me to try Tuxedo OS or anything. I just decided it was an interesting one. I have a Tuxedo laptop. They make their own distribution, which has a few interesting things. And a lot of people have requested me to try it out and maybe make a video about it. So I thought, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. I have that Stellaris 15. I want to try it out. This laptop specifically, the Stellaris 15, has a Windows partition that I basically never boot. I only use it to record footage of Windows for my videos when I need to, which is very rare. And it also had a partition using Ubuntu 22.10, which served as my Steam console interface. But I sort of borked it by installing KDE on top of the default Ubuntu GNOME, and it's always something I hate doing. It mixes and matches themes. It creates tons of entries in the menu. I don't like it. It feels super weird. And removing a desktop environment is not something that's fun to do. Like, you have to identify all the packages for all the apps, for all the things. It's just not fun. Like, you can install it in one command line. You type sudo apt install kubuntu-desktop. But for removing it, if you try to uninstall kubuntu-desktop, it doesn't remove all the packages kubuntu-desktop installed. It only removes the meta package and nothing else. And so you have to hunt for the packages to remove them. I didn't want to do that. And yeah, I also didn't want to upgrade to like 23.04 or anything. I was ready to try something else. So I decided, why not Tuxedo OS? It's technically perfect for this laptop, which is a Tuxedo laptop. So the install went very smoothly. There was no weird options, no anything. Their installer doesn't really look like anything I've used before. It looks like they use some screens from other installers, maybe Calamares, but it doesn't look like Calamares. I couldn't quite put my finger on it. It felt familiar, but it also wasn't another installer that I had used before. I just couldn't really know which one they used. But the install was smooth, super fast, no problems here. But after rebooting, I had an issue where the system said it was at 100% scaling, but it looked like it was at least 150%. Everything was huge, the font was huge, the icons were huge. It was way too big. And I tried changing the value, like actually putting it to 150%, applying that, then going back to 100%, but it didn't work. It stayed really freaking big and unusable. So I decided to install the Wayland session for Plasma, and then I logged out, and then I logged back into the new Wayland session, and I changed the scaling there, which worked, and also fixed the problem on X11, which I don't know why, I don't know, but it worked. So I don't know, why wasn't it detected properly? No idea. And what was that issue? I don't know, but now it's fixed. Apart from that, the experience has been pretty much flawless in the 3 or 4 days that I've been using it. It uses the latest KDE version and the latest kernel. It's a rolling release. It's probably alongside the same lines of something like OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, which means it's a rolling release. You're going to get the latest stuff, but it's going to get delayed a little bit compared to other super bleeding edge distros because they want to do a lot of testing. So I know that they test it specifically for their hardware. I don't know if they test it on non-Tuxedo hardware because their goal is to offer a system for their own devices. The fact that they allow anyone else to download it is a byproduct of it being open source, but I don't know if they want to support specifically everyone else with that distro. But it's an interesting one because in terms of rolling releases with KDE, Ubuntu-based, I don't think you really have any. Or at least Debian-based rolling releases using KDE. You have KDE Neon, but it's only rolling for the desktop. The base is Ubuntu LTS. Tuxedo OS is rolling for everything. So it's an interesting one. And of course, you get the various Tuxedo utilities, so the Tuxedo Control Center, which if you have a Tuxedo laptop or desktop, lets you control a lot of things. Here, for example, I could control the keyboard backlight, color and brightness. I could manage the webcam settings. I could create new performance profiles or edit the ones that already exist. And I got access to their TOMTE program, or TOMTE. I don't really know how you're supposed to pronounce it. This is a thing that auto-detects the laptop model you have, if it's a Tuxedo laptop, and it will apply any necessary configuration automatically. So everything runs perfectly, and you never have to worry about, is that kernel compatible with anything? Or it just uses Tuxedo's repos to automatically detect, download, and apply configurations to make sure that everything is just nice and perfect. If they detected, for example, that a newer kernel version that they want to ship breaks something, well, they automatically apply the patches using this, so you don't have to do anything manually yourself. They do change the default look of KDE. They use a color scheme I'm not necessarily a fan of, with a sort of salmon brick color, which I don't know, I don't think it's super good, but you can change it in 2 clicks. And apart from that, it's vanilla KDE. There's no specific things that have been added or removed, and it's really nice to use. So I also use that laptop as my Steam console. So I use the Tuxedo Control Center to create a specific power profile to use in that specific case. So the CPU is allowed to draw as much power as it can, and the fan is set to the highest possible setting, so the laptop stays really cool and nice. It's a bit noisy, but I still get the best performance that I can from it, so it's a trade-off I'm okay with. Now, I said it ran flawlessly, but there is one issue that I noticed. There was a lot of input latency with a wireless controller using Bluetooth, and I know it's Bluetooth, yes, you're gonna have input latency, but it was way more noticeable on Tuxedo OS than it was on Ubuntu, for example. I don't generally experience that kind of delay, I really can't notice it usually. But here I did. I played Jedi Fallen Order for a bit, not Jedi Survivor, this one I bought for the PS5 because apparently the PC port is really trashy, and I just did not want to wait because I'm a big fan of Fallen Order, I think it was an amazing game. And Jedi Survivor is absolutely fantastic as well, so it's good. But it's a game where you have very short parry windows, much like in a Dark Souls-like game. And it really felt like this input delay on the Bluetooth controller made the game quite unplayable. You really had to anticipate enemy attacks like half a second more than you needed to, and it really made it super hard. So I'll have to look into it a bit more to fix it. It happened with an Xbox controller and with a PS5 controller, so I need to find a solution to fix that. I'm pretty sure I can edit the min connection interval and max connection interval in the Bluetooth main.conf settings. There's got to be something I can do there, but I'll need to look it up. Now, apart from that, it's a solid distribution, but it's way too early to say if it's stable in daily use. It's my main concern with it. Basically, it's a rolling release, and I know they test it, but it's still a rolling release. Like, will it be stable enough? And, like, OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, OpenSUSE Tumbleweed was really, really stable in the month I used it. It never died on me, it never crashed on me, it never had any issue, not even this little, oops, something went wrong window that you often get in even fresh Ubuntu installs. So maybe Tuxedo OS can be as stable as that, but I do not know. So I'm going to have to wait a little bit more and test it more thoroughly before I can really make up my mind about it. But if I had to use a KDE-based distribution, if Tuxedo OS is as stable as OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, I would probably go for Tuxedo OS instead of OpenSUSE Tumbleweed, because I prefer Debian-based distributions. Not because I think they're better, but just because I'm way more familiar with apt and this packaging system. And having a sort of an Ubuntu base, even if it's updated more in a rolling release model, for at least for the major components. I don't think they update all the packages in a rolling release model. They update the drivers, whether they're Mesa or NVIDIA, and the kernel, but I'm not sure that they update every single package in a rolling model. I think they still use the latest Ubuntu base, but only updates the critical components for the best performance possible. I'll have to check this out more, and it will be interesting. And to check that out, there's something that I have planned for this month. I have an interview planned with Tuxedo that will be a special episode of the Linux News Podcast. It's going to be audio only, and I prepared a bunch of questions for them to try and better explain what they do exactly. So the idea is to know what they do with their laptops, for example. How much assembly do they do? How much part picking? How much testing is done? There's also if they're planning to have better distribution centers to reduce shipping fees. For example, being able to ship in the US without charging like $120 for shipping. What their plans are for Tuxedo OS, explaining how it works, what are the differences between them and KDE Neon or Kubuntu, for example. Asking them if they plan to package their tools for other distributions. For example, Tuxedo Control Center or Tuxedo Tomte, T-O-M-T-E, never really know how you're supposed to say it. For now, they're only packaged as a repo for Debian-based distros. There's a copper repo that you can add to Fedora, but I don't think it's in the AUR. Well, it might be in the AUR with a third-party package. But yeah, do they plan to package that for other distributions? And also stuff like, do you plan to offer AMD-dedicated GPUs on your laptops? Or do you plan to offer fingerprint readers? Or do you plan to update the Tuxedo Control Center to handle the infrared cameras that are on some of their laptops that would let you, for example, log in using your face? There are a few questions that I think are interesting. It's basically the most asked questions on YouTube that I get every time I review one of their laptops and a few of my own that I want an answer to. So I hope people will find that interesting, and since it's a special episode, it will not disturb the flow of the usual podcast, so people can just ignore it if they don't want it, and people who are interested can listen to it. And let's complete this patron cast with OpenSUSE Tumbleweed and how their Yast graphical tool changed my perception of Linux in a way. So you might have seen the video I made about OpenSUSE Tumbleweed. I really enjoyed using this distribution. It's stable, it looks good, it's easy. Well, it's not the easiest to install. The installer isn't the best I use. It's way too complex, I think. But maybe that suits the goal of the distro, so that's okay. But it really made me think about what I considered a complete graphical experience. Because, for example, in my mind, Linux Mint was the most complete graphical distros. I thought it had tools for everything, because it did have tools that a lot of other distros don't ship by default, and tools that even desktops like GNOME or KDE don't have at all. So I thought it was really interesting. But then, after using OpenSUSE, I realized now that I was looking at Mint from the viewpoint of a regular user. I am a regular user. Yes, sure, I might know a thing or two about how to configure my system, but in my daily use case, I'm a regular user. I'm not a system administrator, I don't have to configure devices, I don't play around with firewalls or with app armor or with like really advanced networking settings. I'm a basic person in terms of how I use my computers. And after looking at what Yast offers on OpenSUSE, I realized our graphical desktops aren't as complete as I thought. Stuff like graphically configuring the services that are running or that you want to run at startup, or configuring the firewall, or the various system-related settings or variables, or graphically configuring the bootloader, the boot experience. This is all stuff that our desktops don't have out of the box, most of them. I think KDE has a services manager somewhere, but that's about it. And this is stuff that Windows has. For example, you can configure all of this graphically on Windows out of the box, whatever the version of Windows you picked. And so this made me think, crap, some people in the comments are right. The Linux graphical experience is not complete, and you do need the command line to adjust these settings in most cases. And sure, you can find third-party tools to configure a few of these things, notably the firewall. But users have to look for them and trust them, which is not the same as having a default tool. So yeah, Yast is not the most beautiful application. It's clearly decades old in terms of UI, but it does offer a lot of things that no other distro really has. And not everything in Yast will be useful to everyone, of course. But I would still have expected something like KDE to have access to all these kinds of modules, because it's the configurable desktop environment. It's the thing that offers all the configs. So it made me a bit annoyed, because I felt that maybe we're not as advanced in terms of graphical interface as I thought we were. But then I realized I was not looking at this with the right mindset, because Windows is a one-size-fits-all desktop. It is something that's been designed for everyone. Whether you're a normal person that just wants to use a web browser, or whether you're a sysadmin, the default version of Windows needs to have all these tools. Linux distributions aren't meant to be this way. They aren't all one-size-fits-all systems. Mint aims at the everyday user. Fedora aims at open-source enthusiasts that will know how to install the things they need. Arch is aimed at people who really want to have an up-to-date system all the time, and also are competent in fixing the issues themselves. OpenSUSE aims for enterprise, for companies that don't necessarily need the added support of SUSE Linux, but need the graphical tools to configure everything. And so maybe it's not the desktop's job to have all these tools integrated out of the box. Maybe it's the distro's job to decide whether they want to provide something or not to fit their target. Which also begs the question, does Red Hat Enterprise Linux have a similar tool than Yast? I never used it, I don't know. Do they have something similar? Because if they don't, well, I don't really understand why. And Ubuntu, for example, clearly doesn't. They don't have an enterprise version that has the equivalent to Yast. But I'm also not sure that they really aim to provide workstation systems for companies anymore. I think they're more interested in the server market, in the IoT market, in cloud deployments. I don't think they really think they can sell a lot of Ubuntu workstations to people. I know, so Zorin OS has been working on a deployment tool. I think it's called Zorin Grid, but it's more something to configure multiple workstations at the same time, to apply updates to all of these remotely, to enforce policies. I don't think it's been released yet. It's been at least 2 years since they announced it. I don't know where it's going or if it's ready or not, but I think it was an interesting thing as well. But yeah, basically, Yast opened my eyes a little bit on how I thought about Linux and distributions. I guess in the Linux world, we don't necessarily expect the desktop environment to provide all the graphical tools, but we expect the distro to provide the things that will suit their user targets or their demographics. And compared to Windows, Windows needs to provide all the graphical tools to everyone, just in case, because they don't have versions of Windows for specific types. They do have various licenses, and they could definitely say, you know what, in the Windows Home version, you don't get the Services Manager, you don't get the firewall settings, you just get default settings, and that's it. But traditionally, they never did that. What they add in terms of enterprise features are more focused on like virtualization and stuff like that. And if we think about it, macOS also doesn't have these types of tools. On macOS, I don't think there's a graphical way to manage the services that are started, that will not be started. I don't think you can do that by default. And all advanced desktop configurations to change certain properties or configs that are not available graphically, you all have to do them through the command line to edit plist files. So maybe our desktop environments don't need to implement all of that by default. It would look more coherent. For example, if KDE had implemented most of the modules that Yast has, but in their own settings, yes, it would look a lot better. And it would mean that any distribution could use them and provide an experience that's suitable for every type of computing, including enterprise. But Yast is open source, and I'm sure it could be adapted to be used on other distributions than OpenSUSE if these distributions wanted to. So I guess it's just a choice of the distro and not of the desktop. Or maybe there's no one that's interested in working on that on desktop environments. Maybe no one wants to develop a services manager for GNOME, for example, or for KDE. I don't know. But it changed the way I look at operating systems. I realize now that I have been, and some of you already told me that, by the way, in the comments of the latest Patroncast, I think. But when I look at a distribution, I tend to look at it from my own viewpoint as a user. Like, for me personally, would that work? And so I point out the things that, for me, don't work or work really well. And I also tend to try and bring the viewpoint of a beginner, somebody who would not know much about Linux or operating systems. Could that work for them? But I also brought with me other biases, like, for example, all distros should serve everyone, which is not the case. And so this kind of made me realize that when I approach a distribution, I also need to approach it with their intended target. Like, yes, sure, this might not be optimal for the everyday web browsing person, but that's not who this distro is for. So it's not a problem, because if that's what you want to do, there are other choices that will serve your needs better. So this opened my eyes a little bit to maybe be a little less biased in my reviews, and maybe a little bit more objective. You cannot be 100% objective. It's just not possible as a human being. You always will have your own bias and approach and preconceived notions and previous experiences. But I can try to at least tone it down a bit. And that's thanks to Yast. That just got me thinking about the whole rabbit hole of distributions and graphical tools. And so thanks OpenSUSE for that. So this will conclude this podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. As always, thank you so much for supporting the channel. It's really, really awesome to see a lot more patrons and YouTube members. We're still growing in that department, and that's really nice. We're almost at one of the goals on Patreon, I think, which would be trying to buy a 4K camera that can actually do good 4K, because mine can't. So maybe I could start editing at least in 1440p. instead of 4K, and that would be pretty cool. Instead of 1080p, sorry, and that would be pretty cool. So thank you all for the support, and thank you for listening, and I guess you'll hear me in the next one. Bye!